business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
You fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 466 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, October 23rd, 2016. I am the Solid Monster here on a frigid morning in New York. We went straight from summer to the winter. I think we forgot that there's an actual season called fall. And I got a lot to get to this week. More in the ever-changing saga of TNA. And a bunch of other things, too, so we're going to get right into it here. But first, I want to show some love to Audible and all of you that have been cashing in your free Audible trial with our link to pick up The Death of WCW, among other books. You can use our link, audibletrial.com/solomonster. Audible's been very good to this podcast. You can support the podcast by signing up for a 30-day trial of their service. And you get to sample it without being billed free of charge for 30 days. They have over 180,000 books to choose from. As part of your trial, you get one free audiobook. So even if you cancel the trial, if you don't continue on with Audible, you don't like it for some reason, you can't afford it right now, what have you, you get to keep your one free audiobook no matter what. And The Death of WCW is a popular option. I read that many, many years ago. It is funny. It is depressing. It is insightful. It is all of those things rolled up into one. Every wrestling promoter should probably check out The Death of WCW. And so you can use your trial to cash in on that if you'd like, or any other wrestling book that they have on there. So audibletrial.com/solomonster is the link to punch in, sign up, and get your free audio book. Also, if you want to become a PayPal VIP and get your name shouted out here on this podcast, which goes out to the entire world, you can do so. Making a $10 donation will get you a nickname and a shout out here on this show. $30 or more will get you a shout out and a quick plug for your own wrestling podcast, YouTube show, social media, GoFundMe campaign, whatever it may be. So you can do so at any time. If you want to make a donation on thesolomonster.com, that is the place to go. I want to say thank you this week to John Loose Cannon Lopez, who I feel like is a member of the family at this point, Yvonne Bruiser Balak, Deadpool James Herrera, another member of the family, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Hot Stuff Hector Pena, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Nemesis Nathan Moyers, Keith the Conqueror Krajnik, Luis Hercules Hernandez, True Grit Tim Goggin, Misfit Miguel Mendoza, Alvin Chainsaw Siegerts, Brian Hitman Hurst, Ryan the Dagger McTaggart, kind of a big deal Corey Blake, Ian Lights Out Loomis, The Philly Fanatic Caliph Kane, Mastodon Michael Brown, Mass Grave Micah Harshaw, David Funnyman Fazekas, and D-Train Desmond McCade, who wants to send his love to his co-worker Melanie, who is having a baby girl on November 20th, so congrats to Melanie. Greg, King of the Mullet Style Klein, I remember when he sent me that name, because he suggested that name as I recall, and I was a little taken aback by it, but, you know, to each their own. He is the king of the mullet style. And Greg hosts the Killer Instinct podcast, which is talking all news and horror movies. I'm a big horror movie fan. Actually, no, that's a good reminder, too, because a little diversion here for a second. But every year, in the month of October on AMC, AMC, of course, has The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead, which is back tonight. I'm a little nervous about that. See who Negan took out. I can't even venture. Actually, you know what? If I had to venture a guess as to who Negan took that barbed wire bat to, I would probably say Aaron, but I don't know. I guess we'll find out tonight. But in October, every single year, AMC runs these horror movie marathons. And I'm a big fan of the Halloween series. So I'm just they've been doing a Walking Dead nonstop marathon now for weeks. I'm just waiting for it to end. I think it ends tonight so that they can start showing some of those Michael Myers movies. So, anyway, that's the long-winded way of me saying I'm a big horror movie fan. And Greg talks about horror movies on his podcast, talks about comic books. He has the occasional guests from all of those industries, horror, and TV shows, and comics. Faces of Fear is where they review horror movies, and then they have the Walker Report, which talks all things Walking Dead, including the comic book and the TV shows. So you can check him out, J.K. Kline, C-L-I-N-E, .podbean.com. You can check him out also on Stitcher Radio and on Facebook if you want to check out the Killer Instinct podcast. I also want to show some love to the Black Buck, Matt Harrigan. Talk about friends of the show. I consider Matt to be a friend. He's a good dude. He is once again running the Super Kick the Holidays fundraiser, trying to raise money, I believe up to $3K by December 1st, which is a lofty goal. Trying to raise money to buy gear from independent wrestlers, which supports the wrestlers, and then in turn, take those clothes and donate them to the homeless this winter. So it's a great cause. Everybody benefits from it. So please support it at superkickfoundation.org. Also want to shout out Montese Antoine Moore, who just released his official music video for his John Cena song called Triumphant. I've mentioned that song a couple times on the podcast before. Now he has a music video out for the song, which is actually pretty cool. You can check it out right now on YouTube at youtube.com/messagemonteezyTV. That's all one word. Montese, by the way, is M-O-N-T-E-Z. And then the letters TV. Or on Facebook at facebook.com/MonteezeMoore. You can comment on the video there and give it a like. And finally, the promoter, Patrick Phillips, got to shout him out. He has opened up a Kickstarter. Why? I don't know. But he explains it himself on the Kickstarter page. He has started a Kickstarter to buy TNA. Yes, he is looking to raise at least $250,000 to buy TNA Wrestling, because why not? So if you're interested in doing so, you can visit Kickstarter.com, and in the search box on top, type in Let's Buy TNA, and it should be the only result that comes up. It'll be under Hostile Takeover Wrestling. And if you do choose to invest or buy TNA, good luck with that. So, thank you for everybody who donated and contributed in some form or fashion this week. I very much appreciate it. Again, you can always do so on thesolomonster.com. You'll see the PayPal button on the right-hand side. It's very simple, it's quick, it's easy, and of course, it is entirely up to you. We are continuing with my list of the 9 greatest interviews / promos in WWE history this week. I've been having a lot of fun with this countdown. I think you guys have been too. Number 3 last week, which surprised some people. Some people thought it would be number 1. Some people thought it would be number 2. It turned out to be number 3. The CM Punk pipe bomb on Raw back in 2011. We are down now to number 2 this week in the countdown, which I will reveal later in the show. Next week, as I mentioned before, next week we're going to do all of the honorable mentions that I just couldn't fit in this list, and there were a lot of them. But some in particular I want to just single out and talk about. We'll save that for next week. We'll save that for the Halloween show next week. And then the following week, so 2 weeks from now, on our 9-year anniversary episode, November 6th, I will reveal my number one favorite and what I think is the number one best promo / interview in WWE history. So that is the working plan as of right now. I want to lead off with a few words about the AJ Styles, Shawn Michaels stuff that's been going around, okay? 2 weeks ago, on this podcast, I pitched an idea for the Royal Rumble. And people were talking at the time about maybe Shawn Michaels would come back for one night to be in the Royal Rumble match, right? This was about a week after they made the announcement about the Rumble coming back to San Antonio. I think they made the announcement the very end of September. About a week went by, and on the podcast, this is when I pitched the idea. But up until that point, honestly, the only thing I had really heard people kind of chatting about and rumors of, which made sense. I mean, as soon as you found out the Rumble was coming back to the Alamo Dome, the first thing you would logically think is, hey, maybe Shawn Michaels will at least make an appearance on the show. But I heard a lot of people talking about how maybe he'll be in the Rumble. They could convince him to come back and do a quick cameo in the match. I pitched a different idea. My idea was, if you could convince him to come back, which is a long shot, and you probably can't, but if you could, you don't waste him on a cameo spot in the Royal Rumble match. You bring him back. My idea was to wrestle AJ Styles for the WWE Championship 20 years after he challenged Sid for that same title in that same building. That was the idea that I pitched. Okay, it was just that. It was an idea. Obviously, over the past week, there was a rumor that blew up that WWE is supposedly trying to make the match at the Royal Rumble, Shawn Michaels against AJ Styles. They are pursuing that match. They're trying to talk Shawn into coming back one more time, and they've tried this before. I mean, there was a report this year that they tried to get Shawn to come back for a one-off in the Rumble match, and he said no, he turned them down. But the Michaels-AJ thing just blew up this week to the point where Styles was asked about this now in multiple interviews. He talked to Sports Illustrated. He said, well, right now it's all speculation and rumors. You know how the internet is. But, you know, hell yeah, I'd love to wrestle Shawn Michaels at the Royal Rumble. He talked to Scott Fishman with Channel Guide Magazine. I want to read you the quote, what he said in this interview. He said, quote, it seems there is this thing going around the internet about the Royal Rumble and Shawn Michaels. I would love the opportunity to wrestle him. I can't say that will happen. Right now, it's just speculation and rumors. I'm finding out about it like anybody else would. But man, what a match that would be. Who knows what would bring Shawn Michaels out of retirement? It seems there is this thing going around the internet, he says. And then later, AJ went and posted up a piece of fan art that somebody put together on his Twitter page, which is clearly teasing a match between him and Shawn at the Rumble. So, here's what I think may have happened here. I got people sending me message after message. Oh, you, what a prediction, Sala Monster. Look at this. What a prediction. This has nothing to, I don't think this has anything at all to do with predictions. Let me tell you what I think may have happened here. Timeline-wise. When I talked about that on the Sound Off, and of course TV Tracks picked up the clip as well on his YouTube channel, that was 2 weeks ago. I pitched that idea 2 weeks ago. Within a week or so of me mentioning that on the show, there was at least one website that was pointed out to me by some of you guys. One that has at least someone on there who I know is a fan of the show. They posted an item up on their Facebook page, which has a pretty sizable audience, that made it sound like WWE was pushing for a Shawn Michaels-AJ Styles match at the Royal Rumble. It was posted up like a news item. And I think it was from that item that this blew up into something far bigger than it actually is. You know, sometimes these things sort of take on a life of their own. To the point where AJ himself is now getting questions about it. Now, I would love to think that there is some truth to all of this, and WWE really is considering the match, and they're throwing a bunch of money at Shawn to try to convince him to come out of retirement for one night. You know, look at WrestleMania this year. He looked like he could wrestle another 10 matches if he wanted to. But I have read no reports from anybody who I would consider credible that this is the direction the WWE is actually planning for the Rumble. I hope it is, but I really do think that this was just an idea that morphed into something more than it really is. Let's get to the latest on the ever-evolving story of TNA. The hearing that was scheduled for this past week in Billy Corgan's lawsuit against TNA, Dixie Carter, and her husband was postponed until this Wednesday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, according to PW Insider, Corgan's full lawsuit will remain under seal until this Tuesday, October 25th. Corgan's attorneys have until then to file a redacted version of their lawsuit to protect certain items from being made public. These are items that are considered sensitive because they could fall into the hands, quote, of their competitors, end quote. Who those competitors would be, I have no idea. I can't think of any other promotion that doesn't pay its credit card bills or its production people. I think they've pretty much got that market all to themselves. That also came out this week, by the way, that yet another lawsuit was brought against TNA. I've lost track of how many this has been now. And this one was filed back in the summertime. TNA was sued by American Express for over $269,000 in unpaid travel expenses. I think it might be easier to ask at this point who hasn't sued TNA. I'm about to sue TNA. You think this is easy to keep track of all this stuff and talk about it every single week? I'm about to file suit myself. We ought to get a class action lawsuit going. So here's where things get a little more interesting. The Fight Network stepped up this week. Anthem Sports and Entertainment technically did. They're the parent company of the Fight Network. They put out a press release So this is no longer rumor and conjecture. This is a public announcement that they put out. I'll just read you what it says here. This is what they said. The parent company of the Fight Network today confirmed that it recently made a working capital loan to fund operations of TNA Impact Wrestling. Fight Network is a licensee of TNA programming for broadcast in the U.S., Canada, and other international markets, and is also the exclusive licensee of TNA for streaming internet-delivered TV. Okay, blah, blah, blah. Fight Network has also offered to provide TNA Impact Wrestling with funding to repay the loans made by Mr. Billy Corgan and is positioned to provide additional transitional assistance to the company. So, what that means is that Anthem, on behalf of the Fight Network, which does have a stake in TNA, is willing to pay back Billy Corgan all of his money. Money that you have to imagine is in the millions of dollars. I don't know what the exact dollar amount would be, but I know he saved their asses in June at the last possible second. Who knows what other funding he's pumped into the company. It's got to be in the millions. I don't know if it's $2 million, $3 million, $5 million. It's got to be somewhere in that range. And Anthem is willing to step up and pay this guy off. Why? So he'll drop the suit and just walk away. Now, it's worth noting there were some items that were unsealed this week. One of which was the request for a temporary restraining order that Corgan filed. And it was granted, by the way, by the judge, to prevent Dixie from selling the company out from under his nose, from selling the tape library, really from making any sort of moves without Corgan's knowledge and his approval. That's what the restraining order was for. It was granted. And so that's what that was about. So this is what was said about Corgan's request for that restraining order. This is what came out this week. It says, plaintiff is likely to prevail on the merits of its claims because Impact Ventures LLC is insolvent. And as a result, plaintiff is entitled to exercise controlling voting rights in the company pursuant to an equity pledge agreement between the plaintiff, that being Dixie Carter, and Impact Ventures. Or I should say Billy Corgan and Impact Ventures. But anyway, Corgan is saying that TNA is insolvent. It is unable to pay off its debts. And Dixie and the company have in response said, well, we are not insolvent. That's their big retort. He's lying. We're not. But of course, they haven't provided any actual evidence or documents to back up that claim. Who do you think I believe in this situation? Add to all that, Pro Wrestling Sheet got in on the fun this week. They got their hands on a bunch of documents relating to the lawsuit, which shows that Corgan wants TNA to admit that they defaulted on a loan they were supposed to pay him back on, which in turn would make him, or would give him, more control in the company, which I'm sure is what Dixie is trying to avoid like the plague. He also wants TNA to turn over, and this is interesting, Corgan wants TNA to turn over all documents that have been sent or received from WWE since January 1st of this year, up until the present day. So that includes emails, that includes letters, that includes invoices. You know, WikiLeaks ought to get on this shit. All the documents relating to or referencing any negotiations at all this year between TNA and WWE regarding their potential acquisition of the company, their potential acquisition of the tape library, any of its assets. And speaking of the tape library, Corgan is also demanding to know the whereabouts of the TNA tape library. He wants to know where it is. Who's got it? And by the way, I'm sure WWE is just thrilled to have their name dragged into this mess. You know what I want out of this whole thing? Here's what I want. Here's what I'm hoping happens this week, because there's new stories about this every single week. I want that lawsuit unsealed. I don't want Billy to take the money from Anthem and walk away, even though that would be the smart move for him to make, recoup your money, and run for the friggin' hills. I mean, why even bother trying to buy this thing at this point? He'd have better luck making money off a fucking Powerball ticket than he would owning TNA. But I hope he continues on with the suit so it gets unsealed. Because you know, there's gotta be some embarrassing, damaging shit in there if this company, this Anthem company, is willing to pay this guy off in the millions to just drop the suit and walk away. I want all of that embarrassing stuff to come out for all the world to see. That's what I'm hoping for this week. Because these people deserve to be exposed. And I hope they are. And in the end, look, Billy will more than likely win. He'll take over the company. He'll get what he wants. The company's not going to die, right? It sounds like that's what most of the wrestlers want. They want Billy to take over. So it'll be a win-win. The idiots get exposed. Billy gets what he wants. He gets control of the company. He can give TNA a shot. He can try to give him another shot in the arm. I don't know what good it'll do, but he can try. That's what I'll be looking for this week. Paige. A lot happened with Paige since the podcast last Sunday. In fact, last Sunday night in Puerto Rico, Del Rio was working a match for, I think it was the Carlos Colon's promotion, World Wrestling Council. And Paige popped the question to him. She literally got on her knees. You can get your mind out of the gutter. She got on her knees and she whipped out a ring in mid-match, I think. I just want to know the outcome of the match. Might have been a no contest. And she proposed to him. And I mean, what the hell else was the guy going to do, right? Look, he probably would have accepted anyway. They seemed to be madly in love, blah, blah, blah. But you know what? What was he going to do? Was he going to say no? By the way, you know, again, that was a very mysterious stabbing incident that these two were involved in. And I'm still asking questions about that thing. And so Del Rio says no to her proposal in the middle of that ring and embarrasses her in front of everybody. Better make sure there's no sharp objects around. So, of course, he said yes, he accepted, and everybody was happy and they embraced. And so Paige and Alberto Del Rio are now engaged to be married. That escalated quickly, didn't it? I think at this rate, by next year, she'll already have the first kid and probably be expecting the second one. As I said on Twitter, I wonder if WWE will fire her on her wedding day the way they did CM Punk. Supposedly, he was caught off guard. If you watch the video, you know, it looks like he wasn't really expecting it. He's also not yet divorced from his current wife, so they're not going to be getting hitched anytime soon. Definitely weird to see her be the one proposing to him, or maybe not. I mean, everything about these two so far has been fucking weird. I mean, why should this be any different? I'm not saying it doesn't happen where women don't propose to men, but obviously it's usually the other way around. I am reminded of Alicia Silverstone in the movie Crush, which I haven't seen in years. But that movie still sticks in my mind. For Del Rio's sake, I hope she's not as clingy as she was in that movie. You know, like I said, we already have a mysterious stabbing incident. I'm just saying, nothing would surprise me at this point. Paige's family, this is the other big story, and her family is the one who made an issue out of this, because they decided to go public. Paige's father wrote on his Facebook page before he took it down, which was the wise move to make. He said that he is totally against his daughter, quote, marrying that man, end quote. Paige's brother also took to Facebook. I don't know if he took down his post, but he went on there. He called her a silly girl. He said, the truth will come out. Very curious what that means. I don't know if that has to do with the stabbing incident. I don't know if that has to do with something completely different. But he said the truth will come out, and he said he hates seeing his family hurt. This whole thing is just a shame. It really is. You know, from what I've seen, Paige has always been very close with her family. It's like it's this big wrestling family. She's wrestled her mother before, for crying out loud. It's a very tight-knit, close family. And to think that something like this might, you know, change that or might put a strain on things, it's a real shame. You know, maybe, I don't know. I mean, she's young. Maybe she's going through her rebellious phase now. Or maybe she's just really happy. But like I said before, she's only 24. Don't throw your career away. She just had neck surgery on Wednesday. That's going to put her out for at least 6 months. It sounds like the issue with her and WWE had to do with the fact that they didn't think she needed surgery. She went to an outside doctor who said that she did, the same doctor who operated on Tyson Kidd's neck. She apparently had some sort of hernia that was turned out to be worse than expected. She actually put a video up on her Instagram page, it's like a minute-long clip of the surgery and the doctor pulling out one of the little discs, I guess, that was pushing against her spine. It was kind of cool, actually. So, and he said, you know, you're not going to be in pain anymore. We found the problem, and she had three screws put in her neck. She'll probably be out, like I said, at least 6 months. But remember, you know, now she's got two strikes against her. She still has those two test failures. So now she's got two strikes against her. One more and she's gone. And that goes for the rest of her career. Even if she gets a third strike, she gets fired, eventually she comes back, right? She's young enough. She'll always have those two strikes. Unless I suppose she could take advantage of what people call the Orton rule, where you could have one of your strikes removed. It's like this redemption program they have. I suppose she could take advantage of that. But that's the update on Paige and Del Rio. They're getting hitched whenever Del Rio's divorce, I guess, is finalized. And she had the neck surgery, and that's kind of where things stand. And apparently, her and Del Rio, at least the beginnings of their relationship, are going to be featured on this season of Total Divas. I don't even know if Total Divas is on. I know Total... What's the one that's on now? Total Bellas, I think it is. I don't know if Total Divas is on now or if it's coming back later, but whenever it's on the air, apparently they're going to have footage of Paige and Del Rio, and they're going to show, maybe not what's going on now, but they're going to show kind of the beginnings of their romance, Romeo and Juliet. I'm not going to watch, but if you are into that sort of thing, I guess that gives you something to look forward to on that show. Monday Night Raw this past week was live from Denver, Colorado. Raw Twitter poll I put up, 2,789 votes. 67% said that they only cared about Goldberg. I put a third option in this week. And this just proves why I usually don't do that, because invariably whenever I put a third option in there, like, people say, put a thumbs in the middle. I'm not going to do thumbs in the middle, because if I put thumbs in the middle, everyone's just going to vote thumbs in the middle. People can't make up their fucking mind. I know, because I'm the same way. So that's why I usually don't do it. But I made an exception this week, and sure enough, 67% of you said they only cared about Goldberg. 24% voted thumbs up. 9% voted thumbs down. That's almost 3,000 votes. I mean, I get those totals sometimes for, like, big pay-per-views, not for a Raw. So it's very interesting how the ratings go up, as they did this week, and so do the number of people who vote in my poll. Raw was back up over 3 million viewers this week, which I'm sure had to make WWE very happy. To give that some context, though, everything is relative. So that sounds great, and I'm sure they were ecstatic about that number. But remember, when Sting, okay, the last big WCW name, when Sting made his Raw debut the night after Survivor Series 2 years ago, when he walked out there at the beginning of the show, and keep in mind that they were also against football that night, just as they were this week, and the NFL was doing much better ratings then than they are now, almost 5 million people tuned into the beginning of that show to see Sting's debut. So that tells me, A, for all the shit that WWE loved to talk about WCW and putting them down all those years, those guys still have some juice left after all this time. And B, their audience has shrunk quite a bit, even from just 2 years ago. I mean, we could talk about how the audience is smaller than it was 5, 10, 15 years ago. Even from 2 years ago. Raw was still 3 hours 2 years ago. Even from then, look at how the audience has shrunk. If that's not a concern, if you're one of these people that say, well, the ratings don't matter, it's not a big deal, you got to pull your head out of your ass, because that ain't good. Clearly, the people are there. If you give them something they want to see, they'll come back, even if it's just for one night. WWE, they can't bring back a Goldberg every single week, so they're going to have to try to figure out how they can keep those people. I don't know if they can, but to me, that was very eye-opening. Seth Rollins was out there doing comedy in the opening segment with Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho. He called Jericho Sparkle Crotch. That's his new name for him. That's the new buzzword I guess they're trying to get over, you know, because Jericho has sparkles on his trunks. Watching Rollins try to get Sparkle Crotch over, he got the crowd to chant it, so good for him. Maybe they'll start chanting it every week. We can all hope not. But it was just painful to watch. It was painful to watch. I say that not because Rollins was, like, terrible or anything like that, but I sit here now and I look back on the show. I have to review the show, right, and look back on what happened 6 days ago. And it's painful because here's Seth Rollins, their top babyface, and they have him out there trying to be The Rock and making corny jokes about another guy's crotch. And then on the same show, just a couple of hours later, there's Goldberg. You know, a 50-year-old dude who hasn't been seen in 12 years, breathing smoke like a dragon, looking like the baddest motherfucker alive, and making everybody else on this show seem so lame by comparison. It's one thing to compare Goldberg to the New Day. The New Day, they're a comedy act, right? You expect that out of the New Day. But I'm looking back and I'm saying, what were the big things that happened on this show? Okay, Goldberg came back and he looked like a badass. And Seth Rollins came out and he was calling Chris Jericho sparkle crotch and sparkle ass. And I'm just, wow, that is quite the difference between the two of them. And it was really eye-opening to me as far as how little, and seeing the reaction Goldberg got, it was eye-opening as far as how little anybody comes across on this show as a real star. You know, I don't know. I mean, those guys back then had something that a lot of guys now either don't have, and I don't know that I believe that, but either they don't have the same thing that those guys had, or WWE just isn't doing a good job of tapping into it. Probably, there's probably some truth in both of those. So let's talk about Goldberg since I brought him up. He made a triumphant return on this show. This could not have gone any better than it did. They built it up throughout the entire show. They showed you segments of him back in WCW, his debut. I think it was against Hugh Morris. His victory over Hulk Hogan in the Georgia Dome for the WCW Championship. I wish they would have shown that spear. Maybe they didn't, I missed it, but I wish they would have shown that spear on Raven. Again, maybe I was flipping around when they did in that U.S. title match. I did a match anatomy on this show many, many years. Actually, not only did I do a match anatomy many years ago on that match was part of my WCW Best Matches countdown that I did all those months back. And I made sure that match was on there because that match was awesome. It was a short match, but my God, you got to go back and watch that spear, that first spear that Goldberg delivers out of nowhere to Raven before the flock all jumps in. Go do yourself a favor and find that match. And you watch that spear and you don't even listen. You can listen, but watch. Watch the audience. Watch the crowd rise to their feet all at once. It was crazy how over Goldberg was. Goldberg and DDP, I'm telling you, the only two original stars that WCW ever made during that Monday Night War period. I'm not talking about Sting in the 80s. I'm talking the Monday Night Wars. Goldberg and DDP. Those are the two guys. And Goldberg was as over as anyone. So they're showing all these clips of these matches of his back in WCW. And then finally it's time for him to come out. They filmed a long walk through the backstage area, walking past the entire roster, all these scrubs on either side of him. Everyone's cheering him on. They used his WCW music for his entrance, which was awesome. I'm so happy they used his far superior WCW theme, even though they did use, I don't know if you noticed, they used his WWF version of the theme for his exit. So that's fine if they want to have an entrance theme and an exit theme for him. And I say it's fine because I don't expect him to actually win at Survivor Series. So if he just comes out to the WCW theme, that's really all that matters. I don't expect that his music is going to get played at the end anyway. They had the old Goldberg sparks when he first comes out, and breathing the smoke, the pyro. Everything just felt epic about this. And I didn't know what to expect from the crowd in Denver, but boy, did they deliver. They gave this guy a hero's welcome, so much so that you could see how overwhelmed he was by the whole thing. I think he was expecting a decent reaction, but I don't think he was expecting the kind of reaction that he got. And Vince McMahon probably wasn't either. I'm willing to bet that his eyes were opened as well by that reaction. He said it was special for him. His wife and son were in the crowd to watch him live for the very first time. For those asking, by the way, who the guy was, the man that was sitting or standing next to Goldberg's family, they put his face on TV a whole bunch of times. He was even caught on camera doing the Goldberg chant at one point. That was John Hickenlooper, the governor of Colorado, and probably the best name of any governor anywhere in the country. Hickenlooper. He teased leaving things as they are. Goldberg did and said, you know what, maybe we just leave it in the video game. Maybe there is no match between myself and Brock Lesnar. But it was a head fake. He announced that, in fact, he does have one last spear. He does have one last jackhammer left in him. He told Brock Lesnar, you're next. And also, you're last. So it's pretty obvious this is meant to be a one-off. I still say, until he gets in the ring, you know, you can never say for sure if this is going to be it or not. I bet Shawn Michaels, when he went in there for that match with Triple H at SummerSlam back in 02, Shawn didn't envision himself wrestling for 8 more years. He went in there and said, boy, I hope I don't embarrass myself let's see how it goes. It went pretty good, and the rest is history. Now, I'm not saying Goldberg would stick around for 8 years, and Goldberg's a lot older now than Sean was when he came back, but you know what? Never say never. If he goes in there, he gets a big reaction, he doesn't hurt himself, and he is in there, you know, with Brock Lesnar. Got to keep that in mind, too. I don't think Brock's going to be throwing him around quite as bit, you know, quite as much as he was some other people he's been in the ring with. I don't think he's going to give Goldberg 13 suplexes the way he did to Dean Ambrose at WrestleMania this year. I don't think he's going to be laying those elbows in on Goldberg the way he did to Randy Orton, because Goldberg will fuck him up if he tries to do that. But Goldberg is going in there with a guy who has injured people, and who is probably not a very easy person to get in the ring with. You know, you're gonna get roughed up, but he's also 50 years old, and so you don't know your body physically, how you're gonna react to something like that. He hasn't been thrown around by anybody in a number of years. So who's to say that Goldberg doesn't go in there and get hurt? The Rock came back against John Cena at WrestleMania. He got hurt, right? Tore his hamstring. Came back for another WrestleMania match with Cena. I think The Rock tore every fucking muscle in his entire body. He got a hernia. He tore his adductor muscle. He tore this. He tore that. And there's probably a lot of reasons for that. But you can never be sure. But if he goes in there and he doesn't get hurt or hurt too badly and he enjoys it and the fans react to him and Vince is like, wow, this guy has some juice left in him. We could probably still make some money with this guy. You know, money talks, and WrestleMania is coming up and the Hall of Fame and all that. And I'm sure Goldberg wouldn't mind getting in there at WrestleMania or getting in there at the Alamo Dome. So I'm not convinced that this is going to end up being a one-off. They may think it is. Goldberg may think it is. But I have a feeling he'll be back, at least for one more match in the next few months. Right now, I guess they don't know, so they build it up like it's a one-off. So I don't blame it, you know, blame them for that. He put his son on his shoulders after all this was over. He walked around ringside with him. He was hugging and kissing kids all around ringside. This was just really, really cool stuff. And for the people who aren't sold on this match, I don't know. I think it's a great story. I totally see why they're doing it. I think if I were the promoter and I thought I could get Goldberg back for a big pay-per-view match against Brock and I can plug my video game, what promoter wouldn't do that? You don't have to like Goldberg. You can hate Goldberg, but you're a shitty business person if you don't at least entertain the idea of putting this match on. Right? I mean, it'd be one thing if they were bringing in Goldberg to beat Roman Reigns or something. Right? That would be stupid. But if they were bringing in Goldberg, let's say, to lose to Roman Reigns, I don't think the crowd would necessarily react the way they would want them to, but at least you could say, okay, they're bringing in Goldberg, he's going to put over a new guy, I get it, you know, big star from the past against a big star from the present, that's pretty cool. And then they're not doing that, but in this case, you know, it's basically two part-time guys that are going to go in there and they're going to do their thing, and you know, it's not harming anybody. Survivor Series is going to end up being a bunch of elimination matches anyway. So I don't see what the big deal is. I really don't. I love the story. I think it has a great story. Besides the fact that it was the video game that kind of brought everybody together, the story here, it's the man of the children against the guy who doesn't give a shit about your children. What's not to like? So Brock will be on Raw tomorrow night. I'm sure he'll be bouncing up and down in the background while Paul Heyman talks. All in a hard day's work for Brock Lesnar. They had two pre-taped sit-down interviews on this show with Lita. I've never looked at Lita as being interviewer extraordinaire, but there she was. She was conducting an interview with Charlotte and then later with Sasha Banks. They're really trying to make their match at Hell in a Cell feel like a big deal. Of course, the best way to make it feel like a big deal is to make it the main event. And for a time this week, it looked like that was going to be the case. Mick Foley went on his Facebook page and said that the match would be headlining the pay-per-view. That was the word I believe he used. Later on, he clarified those comments to say, well, I'm not aware of the match order on this show. I don't know what it's going to be. It hasn't been finalized yet. But to me, these women are the main event. Well, who gives a shit to you? I don't give a fuck what it is to you. I mean, are they main eventing or not? So either he fucked up and they're not actually headlining, or he let the cat out of the bag a little too early. I said a few weeks ago on this show, they should let them headline. There's no other match on that show that I have any great burning desire to see. This match must go on, unless you're just of the opinion that the Universal title by its very nature, should always headline, then that's cool. I get that. But honestly, I'm looking at this card, and I'm sure Kevin Owens and, you know, Seth Rollins will have a good match, and Roman Reigns and Rusev will have a good match. Roman had a great match inside Hell in a Cell with Bray Wyatt a couple years ago. So I know he's got it in him, as limiting as that cell can be, because you can't put people through the announce table, and you can't, there's a lot of things you can't do if you're inside the cell. So it actually limits what you can do. So there's some good matches, but again, there's no match that I'm looking at going, man, I can't wait to see that match. Like, no, not really. So why not put the women on last? Right? Why not? Sasha's hometown, I expect her to be the most over person on the show anyway. Why not give him the chance? The one criticism of this that I do think is valid was something Luke sent me on Twitter. He said, I just realized something. Both Sasha and Charlotte only talked about making history, not about the actual dangers of being inside Hell in a Cell. Now, that's not entirely true. Lita did ask Sasha about being inside the cell. Sasha said that she was going back to watch old cell matches on the network to prepare, and she wasn't afraid. So she did say that, but he also is right in that there wasn't a whole lot of talk about being inside the cell, which is supposed to be this demonic structure. Sasha talked about history. We're making history. Charlotte and I are making history. She must have been a history major in college. I know some of you played my Sasha Banks drinking game last week during Raw. You were a little tipsy by the end of the show. Had I told you to take a shot every time she used the word history, you'd be fucking dead right now. Charlotte talked about being undefeated for 12 straight pay-per-views, which is actually pretty incredible. And I'm glad she mentioned that. I didn't even know that. So I'm glad she said it. But there, again, nothing about being trapped inside the cell. It goes to the very reason why I hate that they even have a Hell in a Cell pay-per-view in the first place. It's October, so let's break out the cell. Like, it's idiotic. It's idiotic. As far as gimmick shows go, Money in the Bank, that makes sense, right? Each year you crown a new winner. I could even live with TLC. But Hell in a Cell, to me, they should have done away with this years ago. And especially having three on one show. Why do you need three? Why must there be three cell matches on one show? Is there any feud at all right now in WWE that even warrants Hell in a Cell? I mean, I could see, okay, you got Hell in a Cell, you got to have at least one big Hell in a Cell match. To have three of them, they don't even have this one great feud that's going on right now. The closest thing to any kind of, like, sustained emotional feud that they've had going is probably The Miz and Dolph Ziggler, and they're on SmackDown. So, that's part of what I hate about this whole thing, is that it used to be a big deal, and now it's just incidental. It's October, it's time for the cell, and you got these people talking about we're gonna make history. It's like, you could try to focus on the cell a little bit more. Make it a scary place to be. I didn't get that vibe coming from either one of these interviews. Bo Dallas pinned Neville on this show. Let me repeat that in case you missed what I just said or misunderstood me. Bo Dallas pinned Neville in a 2-minute match. And then afterwards, he attacked his partner Curtis Axel, and he left him laying. Neville and Bo Dallas, they once feuded over the NXT title. They even had themselves a pretty good ladder match, if you remember, at that first TakeOver show. I've long since stopped caring or being given a reason to care about Bo Dallas, as has the rest of the world, and the Bo Dallas that I found entertaining is not the one that we see now on Raw. Now he's more serious. They're trying to make him into a serious heel, which is just such a fucking joke. It's a waste of time. It's like when they tried to push Titus O'Neil all those weeks ago, and that fucking flopped, and that didn't go anywhere, and so now they're trying something new with Titus. Apparently, Titus's new gimmick is that he loses every single match. Yeah, good luck with that. So they take these undercard guys, who I kind of feel for, because, you know, some of them, I'm not saying Bo or Titus specifically, but some of them definitely have a lot of talent and could be higher up on the card. I think could be taken seriously higher up on the card. But they do this all the time where they don't focus on those guys. They kind of get lost in the shuffle. And then one day they're like, huh, maybe we should do something with these guys. In this case, huh, we took our roster and we cut it in half, but we still have 3 hours to fill. What a smart move that was, by the way. So now we've got to take a Titus O'Neil. We've got to take, it forces us to do stuff with Bo Dallas and with Titus O'Neil, right? That was one of the arguments that people were making about the benefits of the brand split. Look at Jack Swagger. When was the last time we saw Jack Swagger on TV and all of a sudden he had one match on Raw? He jumped ship to SmackDown. He cut that promo. Jack Swagger. This is a new Jack Swagger. Yeah. You saw Jack Swagger last week? Get his ass whipped in 90 seconds by Baron Corbin, as he should have, because at least Baron Corbin, they can try to make something out of him. It serves no purpose. Unless you're just going to make him job guys, right? Every promotion needs job guys to help make the other guy look good. But all of a sudden, we're supposed to take like a Bo Dallas as a serious threat, a serious heel. The Bo Dallas that I love the hell out of was an NXT who thought he was a babyface, was too naive to understand that people hated his guts. One of the greatest things I ever saw in NXT, for all the great matches they've had, was that segment where the cops tried to round him up. He wouldn't leave. He was running from the cops. They put him in a golf cart. They're driving him all over campus. I laugh my ass off. That's the Bo Dallas I want to see. Otherwise, I don't want to see him. I sure as hell don't want to see him beating Neville in 2 minutes. But they do this all the time with these undercard guys. All of a sudden, we're supposed to care. It just makes me want to change the channel. You've not given me a reason to care for 2 years. All of a sudden, I'm supposed to care? And I just think it's absolutely shameful that they can't come up with anything better for Neville than this. Especially now that they have a cruiserweight division on that same show. It's not like it's on SmackDown. It's on Raw. I just think it's a disgrace what they've done with that guy. Dana Brooke beat Bayley, which stunned the crowd. I actually don't mind Bayley losing because I think losing is part of what made that Bayley character work so well in NXT, up until the point she finally started to win. What I did find embarrassing was the fact that Dana Brooke was seemingly supposed to get her feet on the ropes for the finish, and she was too far from the ropes. So you see her kicking her legs. She's trying. She's like a flopping like a fish out of water. But she couldn't reach the rope. She just pinned Bayley clean. And it looked very awkward. A very, very awkward finish. But I guess it wouldn't be a Dana Brooke match if there wasn't some kind of awkward spot or botch in there somewhere. Sami Zayn will be the first sacrificial lamb of any real note for Braun Strowman, it appears. Strowman squashed 3 jobbers before Zayn came out to stand up to him. And he got bounced out of the ring right away. I actually think Sami Zayn is probably the best possible opponent right now for Braun Strowman. Braun can throw him around. Look, Braun took one of those 3 jobbers on Monday and literally like rocket launched him out of the ring into the pile with his other guys on the outside. That was impressive. That's the kind of thing that Braun Strowman should be doing. He should be throwing guys around like they're just nothing, like a sack of trash. Sami Zayn, he's not a big guy. Compared to Braun, he's not. And so Braun can bounce him around. Yeah, it's the whole David versus Goliath thing. I don't have a problem with that. I guess the only thing is, if you're a Sami Zayn fan, I think you kind of know how this ends. Probably won't end very well for him. But I do think for Strowman, it's probably the best person you could put him in there with. Corey Graves also had the line of the night with one of the jobbers, who actually did bear something of a resemblance without the good physique to No Way Jose. And he just said, look, the guy looked like No Way Jose's less threatening cousin, perhaps not Jorge. And I chuckled. I chuckled more than I would if JBL was on commentary, I'll tell you that much. Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns talks a lot about family lately. He's coming from his Samoan bloodline. So Rusev came out, he said, well, I have a family too. And I liked this segment. I thought it was amusing. By the end, Rusev, he's such a great heel. He actually had the crowd chanting for Roman Reigns. Rusev showed us photos of his mother, Slavka, who was a great rowing champion, and his grandmother, Babushka, and even his dog. As soon as he showed the dog, I couldn't help but remember Dog Ziggler. Rusev is great. Roman Reigns came out. He was heartily booed by the crowd because he interrupted one of the few segments on the show that was actually entertaining. But by the end, when Rusev laid him out, Reigns was cheered. So I guess it accomplished what they set out to do. Big Cass had a singles match with Carl Anderson. He pinned Anderson literally in a minute with the East River Crossing. Carl Anderson should audition for a spot on The Walking Dead, since nobody does a better job of portraying a dead guy than he does. Brian Kendrick, Tony Nese, and Drew Gulak beat TJ Perkins, Rich Swann, and Cedric Alexander. These six had a backstage segment before the match with the absolute worst acting to accompany the absolute worst dialogue that I may have ever seen. I've seen public access shows that were better than this. Oh my God. These guys didn't stand much of a chance. They put them in the death spot. All anybody wanted to see by that point was Goldberg. Kendrick put Swan in the bully choke, and he got the tap out. And so that was the show. I already talked about Goldberg. He was the real main event. That was Raw. And get this. Raw tomorrow night will be 6 days before Hell in a Cell, but you won't have to wait that long because you're getting the pay-per-view tomorrow night. No Cell, but we've got New Day against Cesaro and Sheamus. Of course, they're also having a match at the pay-per-view for the titles, but they're going to wrestle tomorrow night, 6 days before the pay-per-view. And Seth Rollins, Kevin Owens, and Chris Jericho will have a triple threat match, which is the match that I wish they were doing at the pay-per-view. So again, no championship, no Cell, but they're having a triple threat match tomorrow night, 6 days before the pay-per-view. So that should be at least fun. SmackDown. The only real thing of note on SmackDown that I want to talk about is the main event. I thought SmackDown was fine, you know, if not just a little dull, but the main event I thought was awesome. I love that main event. AJ Styles defending the championship against James Ellsworth. Ambrose was the guest ring announcer and the guest timekeeper. He filled both duties. I just thought that this was so perfectly executed for what they were trying to do. You know, they're still building stuff between Styles and Ambrose because Cena went away. He's filming a TV show. He's not going to be around. They're coming up with Survivor Series soon, right? So there's no... You don't have to put Styles in like a big championship singles program right now because you're going into a pay-per-view where he's probably going to be one of five guys on a team in an elimination match. And so they've just got to keep something going now between Styles and Ambrose almost to kill time, I think. And so Ambrose was out there. He was, you know, cheering on Ellsworth. I loved it when Styles put Ellsworth in a chin lock and Ellsworth just slipped out because the dude has no chin. So he slipped out with ease. It's little details like that that I fucking love. Obviously, the best part of the whole thing was the super kick spot, the near fall. There's always got to be a near fall in a match like this. Even when Triple H went against Taka Michinoku on Raw, and I think that also was a championship match. There was like a big near fall where people buy into it, even though you know deep down this guy's got no fucking chance of winning. You've got a better chance of running in there and winning the championship than he does, but for that split second you buy into it. And when AJ turned around, Ellsworth nailed him with a super kick. AJ sold it like death. People were going nuts. Ambrose was jumping up and down. The announcers were going crazy. He got 2.5 and Styles kicked out. And I thought, man, that was awesome. They made me, I can't say they made me believe, but in that instance, I was all wrapped up in what they were trying to do. So I thought that was great. I'll even give David Otunga credit, and I don't do that very often because I don't think he's very good. Although I'd probably listen to Otunga any day of the week over Josh Matthews. But he had one great line here after the super kick where he goes, he hit no chin music. And I was like, there ain't no way you came up with that yourself, dude. But that was still pretty good. Styles got DQ'd basically for kicking too much ass. He was beating him down to the corner and beating him down and beating him down. He wouldn't break the five count, so the ref called for the DQ. So that now makes two victories that James Ellsworth has over AJ Styles. I think if this goes on for any longer, James Ellsworth is going to become AJ's white whale. He's going to become obsessed with beating this guy. And I say don't let him. Let this go on for a while. He would be the one guy that AJ can't beat. AJ's got like 2 wins or 3 wins now over John Cena, but he can't beat James Ellsworth. Now there's rumors I saw of Ellsworth possibly being involved in the Royal Rumble match. Of course, I mentioned that on the show a couple weeks ago. My idea was for him to come in and enter at number one. And get a shock elimination on Braun Strowman later in the match. Kind of the way that Maven once did to The Undertaker. So I am holding out hope they do in fact move forward with that idea. But I definitely expect him to be in there. I don't see any reason why. There's no reason for him to be on TV every week. I know some people are just sick to death of this guy already. I think it's great. I'm happy as hell. He seems like a nice guy. I mean, for God's sakes, I mean, this guy's on Raw, he's on SmackDown, he's fighting AJ Styles, who's probably the best in the world. He's getting a championship match. They made a freaking t-shirt for this guy that they're selling on WWE Shop. I mean, it ain't going to last forever. So I hope he's enjoying it, and I feel happy for the guy. He seems like a good person. But, you know, keep him off TV for a while after this, and then let him come in there and have a spot in the Rumble. And I'm just saying, I would have him go out there as number one. And let him find a way to somehow stay in there, and every time somebody goes to dump him over, he kind of sneaks his way back in. And I think the people would dig it. The people would be behind him, and whoever it is who dumps him out of the ring ultimately is going to get massively, massively booed. And so, and knowing WWE, the way they kind of miscalculate things, they'll end up being fucking Roman Reigns who dumps him out of the ring. And then they'll wonder why people hate Roman Reigns. So anyway, Styles, after the show on Talking Smack, he demanded a championship, or not a championship match, what am I saying? He demanded a match with Dean Ambrose on SmackDown this week. And so Daniel Bryan made the match. If Ambrose wins, he will get another championship opportunity. And it's also been announced that Becky Lynch, whatever her health issue was that she was or is dealing with, she will be back on TV this week. Of course, I think is supposed to defend her title against Alexa Bliss November 8th. They're going to be overseas in Scotland, I believe, taping SmackDown. So I don't know what she'll be doing, but she is supposed to be back on TV this week.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
Good news for Hideo Itami. Apparently, he is only going to be out for 2 months with that neck injury. Could have been a lot longer than that, so that's a good thing. Rich Swann and No Way Jose on NXT this week beat Tony Nese and Drew Gulak to advance in the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. They will meet the Authors of Pain in the next round, so good luck with that. Bobby Roode beat Sean Maluda, who you may remember from the Cruiserweight Classic. I think Maluda was the one who did that wacky dive and almost landed on his head out of the ring. I think he over-rotated or something. I think he's Samoan. If he's Samoan, he's good to go because, you know, they're heads and everything. So he can land on his head and he'll be perfectly fine. That's what I've learned from watching wrestling over the years, is that you can't really do too much damage to a Samoan person if you hit him in the head. I don't know if that's a stereotype or not, but that's what I learned from professional wrestling. Anyway, Roode cut a promo after the match on Ty Dillinger. He will be meeting Dillinger at TakeOver in Toronto. And Dillinger ran down to attack him. He clotheslined Roode out of the ring. Both of those guys are going to be insanely over in Toronto since both of them are Canadian. I would open the show with that match. I think that'll be a lot of fun. Billy Kay and Peyton Royce seem to be the new Dana Brooke and Emma here on this show. They beat up Liv Morgan backstage, dragged her out onto the stage in front of everybody, beat her up some more. They said that they now run the women's division. I guess if they're Dana Brooke and Emma, I guess Liv is supposed to be the lovable loser like Bayley, but without the inflatable tube men. Niko Bogojevic, remember him? He's the new guy. I think they signed him not too long ago. He was supposed to team up with Tucker Knight in the Dusty Classic. Well, he has a new name now. He is now Otis Dojevic. And we got to look at him for the first time here as partners with Tucker Knight against Austin Aries and the debuting Roderick Strong in yet another Dusty Classic match here in the first round. I thought Roddy got a good reaction, not a great reaction. He didn't get that blowaway reaction that, like, Aries, for example, got when he debuted, or even Samoa Joe, or Hideo Itami, or Finn Balor. But he got a good reaction. Him and Aries were tag team champions many moons ago in Ring of Honor, so they have that experience together. Roddy pinned Tucker Knight with the gut check, followed by a sick kick. They didn't call it a sick kick, but I am. That's what I'm calling it. I enjoyed watching, I'll tell you, not that I hated watching Aries and Strong, but I enjoyed watching Tucker and Otis together. Just two big guys throwing their weight around, just having fun. I thought they were fun to watch. But it'll be Aries and Strong facing TM61 in the next round. Nikki Cross, who was out there with the rest of Sanity, beat Danielle Camella. Nikki kept scratching and biting herself like she needed rabies shots or something, and it reminded me of Raven's Flock when Kidman used to scratch himself all the time. After the match, Nikki kept beating on Danielle, and then when Eric Young tried to pull her off, she slapped him too. So she was so out of control, the referee reversed his decision and awarded the match to Nikki's opponent by DQ. I don't know that I have seen that finish in WWE. I'm sure it must have happened. But the last time I can honestly remember seeing one of these matches where the person just kept, you know, wouldn't let go of a hold or was beating on the other person and the ref reversed the decision and gave the win to the other person. I always think back to SummerSlam in 93 when Bret had that match with Jerry Lawler and he wouldn't let go of the sharpshooter. He kept him in that sharpshooter for like 10 minutes straight, would not let go. And the referee reversed the decision and gave the win to Lawler. So it's just one of those things that, for whatever reason, after all these years, is the one that sticks in my head whenever I see that finish. Main event was a Nakamura promo on Samoa Joe. He was interrupted by Patrick Clark and his very questionable fashion sense. I guess he's trying to be a modern-day Gorgeous George or something. I don't know. He said the match that people really wanted to see was Nakamura against himself. And as soon as he stepped inside, Nakamura laid him out. Samoa Joe tried to run down and sneak up on Nakamura, but Nakamura caught him out of the corner of his eye. And then he gave Clark the Kinshasa to end the show. So it's all systems go to take over. It'll be Joe and Nakamura. It'll be Ty Dillinger and Bobby Roode. I think that'll be the finals as well of the Dusty Classic. And there's another item. It's kind of a spoiler item. I won't mention it, but the women's match in the next week or two should become very obvious as well. We have Lucha Underground to talk about here. Matanza vanquished yet another opponent from Dario's Dial of Doom. Killshot was the chosen victim this week. I thought they had a good match. Matanza wins with the Wrath of the Gods. The real story was after the match. We got this storyline progression here on Lucha Underground. After the match, we had the debut of AR Fox. And he, I guess, was the one who left that note for Killshot that said, "You left me for dead." So it looks like it'll be one of his old military buddies. That'll probably be his story. Killshot couldn't believe it. He thought this guy was dead. He goes to give him a big hug, but Fox ends up beating the shit out of him and then throws his dog tags at Killshot. Dario Cueto announced that Aztec Warfare is back in 4 weeks. He also said that no one has been able to even come close to beating his brother Matanza. And so, Matanza will enter Aztec Warfare, even though he's the champion. He will enter at number one. And his Lucha Underground Championship will be on the line. And he also tells the trios champs, Phoenix, Drago, and Aerostar, who came out there expecting a six-man tag team match. They didn't know who their opponents were. And they found out that, well, your opponents are each other, because you guys are going to have a triple threat match right now. The winner gets to be number 20 in Aztec Warfare. You get to enter last. The other two losers in this match are out of Aztec Warfare. And Drago got the win, which shocked me. I figured Phoenix would take it, but apparently he and Aerostar are out of Aztec Warfare. Drago is in. Johnny Mundo is back once again. He is in Dario Cueto's office. He is so desperate for a championship match. Just a Gift of the Gods championship match. He pays Dario back the $100,000 that he won back in Season 1. If you remember that ladder match he had against Prince Puma and Big Rick with the briefcase of money and everything. He says, actually, now it's down to $94,000. I had to pay off somebody. And Dario grants him his Gift of the Gods title match, I guess, next week against Sexy Star. Now, think about this. This guy paid $100,000 to get a title shot, and it wasn't even the main title. That'd be like someone paying $100,000 to the Raw GM or the SmackDown GM just for a spot in the Money in the Bank ladder match. Yes, I guess in theory, just that spot in the match could net you a briefcase, and that briefcase could net you a championship at some point, but it ain't worth $100,000, okay? I guess Mundo's got the cash to throw around. Good for him. As the great Virgil might say, he got that fuck money, so good for Mundo. And lastly here, we got a really good main event with Prince Puma pinning Mil Muertes after a 6:30 off the top. That issue obviously is not over. That feud is going to continue. Show ended, though, with Rey Mysterio talking to Chavo Classic. Chavo Classic making his debut here on Lucha Underground. Chavo Classic is Chavo Guerrero Sr., for those who don't know. Chavo Jr.'s daddy. I'd much rather see Chavo Classic on the show than Chavo Jr. And Mysterio tells him, you know, one of them, it's either me or your son, have to leave the temple. This place ain't big enough for the both of us. And so, I don't know where this is going, but I guess the whole story is never trust a Guerrero. Rey's probably too stupid to realize that. And that was Lucha Underground. Good show. Just not much else to say about it, really, but I enjoyed it. You know, all the stories are moving forward, and I know some people aren't really into Season 3. They weren't into Season 2 the way that they were Season 1. I don't want to get into the business of comparing seasons, especially now. Season 3 is going to be so long. I think the season goes until June. This is going to be the longest season yet. It's like 40 episodes. Is it as good as Season 1? I don't know that it's as strong as a lot of the stuff we saw in Season 1, but it's not like, I don't think it's jumped the shark. I don't think it's a case where I'm not enjoying it. I enjoy Lucha Underground every week. It probably is still my favorite show to watch out of all of them. As good as SmackDown is and Raw, I mean, a lot of them are just wildly inconsistent. NXT is starting to pick up again, but for the longest time as they rebuild, NXT was boring as shit. And now it's finally kind of picking up a little bit now. But I still enjoy Lucha Underground the way that I did a year ago. You know, it's consistent in that way. You'll have weeks where some shows are a little more dull than others. But, you know, very rarely do I watch Lucha Underground and think, man, that was a bad show. Man, I can't believe I wasted 48 minutes of my day. It's a short show. They focus on stories in the long, you know, the long term over the long haul. They usually pay them off well in the end. They usually have a big wild match or a wild brawl or somebody dies or, you know, there's always a payoff. I have a certain trust in these writers that they know what they're doing that I don't have in any other promotion, in any other show. And so, you know, do I enjoy it as much as I did? Who cares? I still enjoy it, right? So that's, to me, that's all that matters. And they're always introducing new characters into the show. Now we have A.R. Fox. Sami Callihan made his first appearance on the show a few weeks ago. We haven't seen him since. But I like the way they kind of rotate guys out of the show. That's the way WWE used to do with Raw. When Raw used to be an hour back in the mid-90s, the early 90s, you didn't see the same guys on the show every week. Lex Luger was not on Raw every single week. You got to kind of recycle guys, or cycle, not recycle, in and out. Superstars, Wrestling Challenge, you didn't have the same guys on the show every single week. With Raw, it's unavoidable. Everybody has to be on the show every single week. And even then, they struggle. So that's one of the benefits of NXT being an hour, of Lucha Underground being an hour. You can kind of keep things fresh, and you may see Pentagon. There may be a whole show about nothing but Pentagon, but then Pentagon may not show up again for another 2 weeks. And I think that does help keep the show fresher. This week's mailbag, the Magic Mailbag, I guess you would call it, is sponsored by Pro Wrestling Magic. Their next big event, Final Hours, The Road to Kingdom Come, takes place on Saturday, November 19th at the New Milford High School in New Milford, New Jersey. Special start time of 4 p.m. Sonya Strong defends her women's championship against Kimber Lee. Limitless Keith Lee makes his return. The ultra-violent Beast Masada makes his debut, plus the Beaver Boys, JT Dunn, Jonathan Gresham, and more. A portion of the proceeds will go to the Children's Cancer Institute for Pediatric Cancer Research. Tickets can be purchased at prowrestlingmagic.ticketleap.com. And you can use the promo code SOLOMONSTER to save $3 off your ticket. So it's $30 for a front row seat, $20 for general admission. For either one, use the code SOLOMONSTER and get $3 off. Check out Pro Wrestling Magic. They got a good thing going on there. Always support independent wrestling. I've always had fun. Every indie show I've ever been to, I've always had fun. And so definitely check those guys out. If you have questions for the mailbag, as always, you can send them to thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from. Tanner in Wilmington, North Carolina. With it looking more and more likely that TNA is about to go under, which company do you think was or is worse off at the end of its run, WCW or TNA? Well, WCW was pulling 2 to 3 million viewers still at the end of its run, okay, and they were able to pay its employees, so I would say TNA is worse, but I am not convinced that it's over for them yet. It's like I said before, they're like a cockroach. You think they're dead, but they're not really dead. They start moving, right? The leg starts moving, the arm starts moving. You can spray whatever you want to spray at it, it doesn't matter. They build up an immunity to it. you can't kill the fucking thing. So let's not jump to conclude. People have been saying that about TNA for 14 years now. Oh, this is it. This is the end. And it sure does look like this is as bad as it's been. Okay, with all the lawsuits and, you know, what Corgan is trying to do. Like I said, I want that lawsuit to be unsealed this week. I think if there's a lot of embarrassing stuff in there, then the idiots deserve to be exposed. And let Corgan take it then and do what he wants to with it. But I think it would be premature to say that this is the end of TNA. But WCW was still operating from a much stronger position at their end than TNA is right now. Andrew from Fort Erie, Ontario. Now that Raw has accepted the challenge from SmackDown for Survivor Series, do you think the tag team match is going to be a 20-man elimination, or are they going to just pick one person from each team? I think it'll be 20 men. They did a match like that at the original Survivor Series. I don't remember the rules, but I would think it'll be 20 men, and when one member of a team is beaten, the entire team has to go to the back. That would be my guess. I don't think they've said one way or the other yet. I can't see having 20 guys in there and having to eliminate each one of them. Unless they do those rapid-fire eliminations. I hate when they do that. I think it would make sense when one guy gets pinned or submits, the entire team goes to the back. Ray in Fort Worth, Texas. I'm watching Goldberg versus DDP from Halloween Havoc 98. I think it's Goldberg's best match ever. I thought DDP was going to win when he hit the diamond cutter. That would have been Goldberg's first loss. Who would you have had beat Goldberg for the title and end his streak? I think Bret Hart should have been the man. What say you? No, I don't. Bret didn't need it. Bret didn't need it. You already said the answer. It should have been DDP. You're right about their Halloween Havoc match. I had DDP on the podcast the first time. If you want to go back, it's Sound Off 416 in the archives. That was back when I was doing my WCW Greatest Matches countdown, building to the, you know, the 15-year anniversary of the death of WCW this year. And, you know, Dallas was kind enough to come on the show. He did a whole segment with me just on that one match, on that Halloween Havoc match. And even he said he thought the streak should have ended that night. Now, of course, he might not be the most impartial person to say that. I'm sure he would have loved to have won the championship that night. But he should have won on that jackhammer reversal into the diamond cutter. The place would have just exploded even more than they did. It's not as though people would not have accepted that as a finish. Like, oh my God, I can't believe that Goldberg lost to this guy. Goldberg was as hot as anybody in that company at the time. I wouldn't put DDP quite on the exact same level. I would put him one, you know, level below. Because Goldberg, when he was on top and he was hot, he was hot. But DDP was also over like Rover. I mean, he was very, very popular as well. So you had this match between these two top babyfaces, and the crowd was into it, and it felt like this electric atmosphere. And that sequence, the whole reversal into the diamond cutter, was so freaking awesome that there isn't a single person, unless they just hated DDP's guts, who would have complained, I think, about that being the finish of that match. And then what you could do is you either run with DDP as the hot babyface and see how far he can go, or maybe he goes heel not long after that and Goldberg feuds with him until he gets the belt back. But that was easily the best match of Goldberg's career. Goldberg has said the same thing in interviews. You know, one of the stories that Dallas told on the podcast was that Bill almost ended up in a wheelchair after that match. Because if you go back and you watch the spear right before that jackhammer spot, the spear that he gives to DDP, Goldberg spiked himself right on his head. And DDP said the only thing that saved Goldberg from paralysis was how thick his neck was. His head literally bounced off the mat. It took him a while to get back up, but he got back up, thankfully. And Dallas was pissed because he hits the diamond cutter reversal. They're both laid out. Place is going nuts. Dallas takes his sweet time crawling over, putting his arm over Goldberg to pin him. And I guess, because Dallas, he plans his matches out meticulously. And so he had this whole thing mapped out how he wanted it to go. And he was going to wait until the last possible second Goldberg was before getting his shoulder up. And Goldberg, you know, he kicked out a little early. And Dallas was pissed. He was upset about that. Because that wasn't the way that he had planned it. That wasn't the way he had envisioned it. But when they got backstage after the match, you know, he asked Goldberg, like, dude, what happened out there? Why didn't you know, wait a little bit longer? And Goldberg just told him, dude, I don't remember a damn thing. Like, he knocked himself loopy on that spear. So that was one of those funny little side stories that he told about the match if you want to go back and listen to the rest of it. But I think DDP would have been as good of a choice as anybody. It wouldn't have really hurt Goldberg that much. And he could have gotten the belt back. And I think all would have been fine. But I think that was the time and that was the moment for it to happen. Gabriel from San Diego. I ran by a video tribute of Owen Hart online. In it, Triple H is openly crying. I know Owen was one of the wrestlers that fell victim to the click, but in the video it looked as if Triple H had lost a close friend. Do you have any insight on the type of relationship they had or what could have prompted Triple H to take his death so hard? I mean, I don't know what their personal relationship was. I know Owen was beloved by pretty much everybody there, and he was a colleague. Look at the way he died. You don't have to be close to somebody to be emotional about something like that. You know, and Triple H has told, I mean, I get the impression they were friends. He's told stories about Owen playing a rib on him once in the ring. I think it was in one of the Royal Rumble matches. You know, I don't remember hearing about Owen having any problems with the click, like you mentioned. I mean, obviously Brett did. And I'm sure by extension, Owen and Davey Boy and them were not fond of what, you know, DX and the click were doing. But I don't know that they actively politicked against Owen or anything like that. Maybe they did. Maybe they did. You know, I know when Owen came back after the screw job, because Vince wouldn't let him out of his contract, Owen wanted to leave. He wanted to leave and go with Brett to WCW, and Vince said no. And so they worked out a deal for him to come back, and Owen came back. He attacked Shawn his very first night. He went after him. And, you know, Owen, this was as hot as Owen had been his entire career. I mean, he was being made out to be like a top guy. And I really don't know why they blew their match off on TV. They ended up doing the match, I think it was for the championship, between Shawn and Owen on Raw. I think that might have been the match where Triple H hit Owen in the head with a crutch for the DQ, because Triple H had a knee injury at the time. And they blew the match off on TV. They never went back to it. After that, it became a feud between Owen and Triple H, and Shawn had moved on to something else. And I really don't know why they didn't just save that match for the Royal Rumble. I mean, coming off the screw job, which is all anybody was talking about. Here we are 16 years later. They still sometimes can't shut the fuck up about it. But that was the hottest thing in wrestling. Everybody was talking about it. Owen was Brett's brother. He comes back. He wants a piece of Shawn Michaels. I mean, it's a story that made sense. And they absolutely could have saved that match for the Rumble instead of doing a third match between Shawn and The Undertaker. I mean, they already had two. And the Hell in a Cell match, I think, between Shawn and Taker, that would have been a fitting blow-off for their feud. And instead, they did the casket match, and look what happened. Took 4 years off of Shawn Michaels' career. Although I guess the path he was going down, looking back, it probably saved the guy's life. Caliph from Philly. Did Macho Man ever pin Hulk Hogan or beat him at all? That is a good question. Savage, I know for a fact that Savage definitely beat Hogan a few times by like DQ or countout, but I don't ever remember him pinning Hogan. Like clean or like with the trunks or with a weapon or anything like that. Yeah, I don't remember that. That's a really good question, actually. Maybe somebody listening can enlighten me if I'm wrong, but I don't ever remember Randy Savage getting a pinfall win over Hulk Hogan in either WWF or WCW. Even The Rock got one pin over Steve Austin in his career, like for all the singles matches they had. Like, I'm not talking tag matches. For all the singles matches that Rock and Austin had, I'm pretty sure the only time Rock ever pinned Austin was at WrestleMania 19. At least he had that, right? Austin's last match. This was his last chance. At least The Rock got that. But I can't recall a single time Savage pinned Hogan. And I guess if he did, it's probably locked away on the same tape with the Snake Pit segment where Jake DDT'd Hogan and got cheered for it. Nathan from York, Pennsylvania, what do you think is the greatest match in Royal Rumble history that was not actually the Rumble match itself? Ooh, well, I mean, there's a few matches that come to mind. I think of the ladder match that Jericho and Benoit had in 01. I think of, there's been a bunch of them, actually. I think, you know what? It comes down to two for me. And actually, Umaga and John Cena had a great match. I think it was the last man standing match they had in like 06 or 07. I think 07. But the best would come down for me either Angle Benoit from 03, which was a great championship match, Or, and this is probably the one I would say Triple H and Cactus Jack. The street fight they had at the Garden, Royal Rumble 2000, for the championship. The match that, to me, I can't speak for everybody, but I know for me, it made me look at Triple H as a main eventer for the first time. Before that, I really didn't see him as like a top guy. After the feud with Foley, I did. I would say Foley and Triple H from Rumble 2000, and then right behind that, Angle and Benoit from Rumble in 03. David from Sacramento, the original plan for NXT Toronto was to have been Trish Stratus against Asuka for the NXT Women's Championship. However, Trish got pregnant with her second child. Do you think things actually worked out way better with Mickie James taking her place to put over Asuka? Would Trish losing have left a sour taste in people's mouths with it being in her hometown? No, not at all. Not at all. I think it would have been great. I think it would have been great heel heat to have Asuka kill her after the match and then have the next challenger, whoever it is, make the save. Maybe it's Ember Moon or whoever it is. I'm not sure who else it would be if it were an Ember Moon. You know, it's too bad. It's too bad that Trish couldn't do it. I guess she had a good excuse. Congrats to her, by the way. But I think Mickey's a great choice, too. And actually, it's funny that you mentioned that because I went out of my way. I went out of my way in the NXT review earlier not to mention this because some people are very sensitive to spoilers. And now I just spoiled it, so sorry, not my fault, blame David. But yeah, I think it'll be a great match either way. I'm looking forward to it. David has one more question I'll get to here. He says, we all know Bill Goldberg is the flagship downloadable character for WWE 2K17. Did WWE miss an opportunity to make Kurt Angle the downloadable character and reveal it as a tie-in with the Summer 2016 Olympics? That's right, you know, the Olympics this year, it was in Atlanta, no less, 20 years since Kurt Angle won the gold medal, which is why I think it would have been a perfect time for him to make a comeback on Raw. Remember that Raw show in July when I think Rusev was out there and Roman Reigns came out instead of Kurt Angle? That would have been a great moment. But I think it would have been cool, but you know what? With Kurt Angle, now they've got their cover boy for 2K18. I mean, I personally would love to see them do the idea that I pitched for the Rumble this year, for the 2016 Rumble. You know, obviously now just have them do it instead at the Alamo Dome next year would work just the same, which is have Kurt as a surprise, not just have Kurt as a surprise entrant in the Rumble match, but have him come out just as Brock Lesnar has cleared the ring. I'd put Brock in the Rumble again like they did this year. Have it come to a point in the Rumble where whether everyone's just laid out or everybody is eliminated and he's the only one in there, whatever the case may be, you have Brock as the last man standing in the middle of the match. Countdown clock hits. Kurt's music hits. He comes out, gets the big pop, stares down Brock. Brock stares him down. Kurt comes to the ring and you get a taste of Angle and Lesnar, even if it's just for a minute. Let them go at it for a minute before the next person comes and kind of interferes and breaks up their little brawl. I'm hoping they do it this year. I'm hoping they do it in 2017, but if not, I think you've got your main character right there for the next game. So either way, I expect Kurt to be back in the company next year. Charles from Missouri wanted me to talk about Bret Hart's idea for his match with Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 13. Bret made an unannounced appearance at a one-man show few weeks ago. I guess it would have been a two-man show because it had Jim Ross and Jim Cornette in the UK. And he talked about what his... Now, this was his idea. His original idea was for his match with Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 13, which, of course, never did happen. I think plans changed a few times for that show. But I guess the original idea that Bret had, or actually that the company had, they wanted to do the rematch from WrestleMania 12. It would have been Bret against Shawn. Bret, I think, would get his win back. But Bret's original idea was this. He would come back with a chip on his shoulder after seeing Shawn win the title on TV, and Shawn's out there pulling his pants down. I remember Bret used to talk all the time, oh, you pose for girly magazines. He'd call him... I always used to laugh when Bret would call him Boy Toy. He'd be like, Shawn Michaels, Boy Toy. He's like, Bret's promos on Shawn back then were actually funnier more than anything else to listen to, because he said the same stuff over and over again, but I just laughed my ass off whenever he'd be like, you pierced your navel, boy toy, and you're scum, you're this, you're that. So anyway, he would come back, he'd have a chip on his shoulder, because Shawn is doing all these things that he doesn't approve of on TV as the champion. Bret, he'd be bothered by all of this. They'd have a match at WrestleMania, 30-minute match. Shawn's in the corner, he's stomping his foot, he's setting up for the super kick, and when he goes for it, Bret's idea was, I'm going to catch him by the foot, I'm going to take him down to the mat, I'm going to put him in what I guess Bret called a shoot hold, and he's going to break his foot right in the middle of the ring. And Shawn would immediately start tapping, like frivolously tapping out in pain. He said he wanted Shawn to do a quick tap out like you would sometimes see in UFC. And then when they hand Bret the belt, he stands over Shawn and says, fuck you. That was Bret's idea for the finish of their match. Now, some people seem to hate the idea because they can't believe Shawn would ever allow Bret to legit break his foot. That's not what he said. He was talking about making it look like he legitimately broke his foot. Some people think that's what Bret wanted. He wanted to let Shawn have him break his foot. The idea, as I understand it, is he would, you know, it would look as though he broke Shawn's foot, and Shawn would sell it like it's a legitimate injury, and maybe he'd even be out for a few months to sell it as being real. Having said all of that, I think it would have been a stupid idea, and thank God it never happened. And again, I say that as a huge fan of Bret Hart. First of all, I don't think a finish like that would have gone over very well in the WrestleMania main event, at least not back then. Maybe now, like, people would be more open to that. We see a lot more submission holds now, and, you know, UFC obviously is a lot more prevalent now than it was in 97. I mean, it was still kind of like an underground thing back then. But I don't think it would have gone over well as a finish for a Mania main event. I think people would have been confused. I think people would have been upset. I think it would have been kind of lackluster. But Bret's big idea, and I think this is the bigger issue here, Bret's big idea for his rematch with Shawn was to make him tap out quickly like a bitch and then stand over him and say, fuck you. Like, I can see why Shawn lost his smile when he did. Right? It would have been better. It would have been better to do the finish they did in the match with Austin. So if it was Bret and Shawn and Bret Austin never happened, let Bret and Shawn, let them have a violent match with Shawn passing out in the sharpshooter, maybe bloodied or not. Shawn just won't give up. Bret won't let go. Right? So that way nobody's ego gets bruised. They both get to save face. It gets the belt off Shawn. It gets the belt onto Bret. And if the plan is still to turn Bret Hart heel after that show, you can do the same deal where he puts Shawn back in the sharpshooter after the match and he has to be pulled off. And then the next night he trashes the American wrestling fans. And now Shawn, as the babyface, can sort of lead Team USA, if you want to call it that, against Team Canada, right? Bret goes ahead, he reunites the Hart Foundation to help protect his title. All of that being said, I'm pretty damn happy with the Bret Hart-Steve Austin match we got. I'll bet Austin is too, so I think things worked out okay. But I think it would have been much better to take that finish and use it in a Bret-Shawn match instead of doing what Bret suggested, because I just don't think it's a very good idea. Phil from Liverpool, England. Buy or sell? Steve Austin versus CM Punk or Shawn Michaels versus AJ Styles? Well, right now it's Michaels and AJ, but I mean, if we're talking Punk and Austin a few years back when Punk was itching for the match, I'm buying on that. Buying on Austin and Punk. The peak interest in that match against the interest now in the AJ Styles match, I'm buying on Punk and Austin. And I'm selling on Michaels and AJ. Michaels and AJ might be a much better match, but the shit-talking and the build to Austin's big comeback against Punk when Punk was at his peak of popularity, to me, that would have been much bigger. Much, much bigger. That match would have been huge. And one last buy or sell here. Mark from Youngstown, Ohio. This one also has to do with the two matches. Buy or sell on the better match. The first ladder match with Shawn and Razor at WrestleMania 10 or the first Hell in a Cell match with Shawn and The Undertaker at Bad Blood. Bad Blood. I remember that show. For all the wrong reasons, I remember that show. I remember being on a family vacation and wrestling hotlines were kind of in vogue at the time. And I called one and first thing they said was, Brian Pillman is dead. And I'm like, oh shit. That's my memory when I think of Bad Blood. But the match of Bad Blood, I mean, that Hell in a Cell match, I would say that Hell in a Cell match is still in my opinion, the best one they ever did. You could say Undertaker Mankind. It's so hard to grade that match because that was more of like a spectacle almost than a match. So I almost kind of leave that one on the side. I enjoyed it, but I also kind of hate myself for enjoying it, if that makes sense. Shawn Undertaker just had a fantastic match. Everything about that match, they had a feud building for a couple months before then. They just worked very well together. The blood, which you rarely see now in Hell in a Cell match. It happens. They will sometimes get blood, but you know they try to avoid blood at all costs. It's not like it used to be. And when you think Hell in a Cell, I'm sorry, but it's hard not to think of this ultra-violent match where both guys should be bleeding, or at least one person should be bleeding. So they had the blood, they escaped the cage, Shawn fell from the cage. I mean, everything about that match was awesome. Right down to what happened at the end of the match. So, did it have kind of a fuck finish? Yeah, it did. There was interference, but I still maintain to this day, after all these years, that Kane's debut in that Hell in a Cell match is still the greatest debut in WWE history. And I think I've ranked them here on the show before. I put Kane at number one. Probably Jericho at number two. Taz, I think I had at number three on my list. But Kane, the one constant, as the rest of that list might change, is that Kane is always number one. I have yet to see a new star or a new character make a debut on a WWE show as impactful as the one that Kane did. So you take Kane's debut at the end, you roll it all up with the rest of the match, you got yourself a friggin' awesome match. Now, the ladder match of WrestleMania 10 was also excellent. I would probably say that I think their second match was better. The match they had at SummerSlam 95, I think I might have enjoyed a little bit more. But obviously the match at WrestleMania 10 was, you know, it was great. It was a great match, and it left an impression on a lot of young people who went on to become wrestlers, and they cite that match as, oh, I remember that match when I was a kid, and Shawn Michaels made this impression on me, and you know, definitely had a lasting impact. But if I had a buy on the better match, I'm going with the Hell in a Cell match. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. Whatever you're looking for, you're looking for good wrestling, you're looking for violence, you're looking for stories and personalities. To me, that Hell in a Cell match had everything. With Undertaker, with Michaels, with Kane. You get everything in that match that you could possibly want. We are down to the final two picks in my countdown of the top 9 greatest promo/interviews in WWE history. We're doing number 2 this week, and then next week I've got a bunch of honorable mentions to highlight before the big reveal on November 6th. This week might cause a little controversy with people who think this should easily be number 1, but just remember, this list was never just about promos or interviews that, like, their overall impact or the effect the promo had on business or anything like that. It's my own list of what I feel are the best promos for lots of different reasons. It could be what it did for business. It could just be because I thought it was a fantastic promo that's still remembered to this day. When Steve Austin came to the WWF, they called him the Ringmaster. And they put him with Ted DiBiase. DiBiase was going to be his mouthpiece. And for a few months, he kind of floundered a little bit. He had a feud with Savio Vega. I thought he and Savio ended up having some damn good matches together, especially their strap match at the Beware of Dogs show. The second one they did, not the first one where the power went out and they wrestled in the dark. The stipulation was that if Austin lost that match, DiBiase would leave the company. Well, Austin lost, and DiBiase left to go join the NWO. Even before his King of the Ring speech, there were 3 key events. I bulleted them here. 3 key events that changed the course of Austin's career. And really, I mean, it changed the course of wrestling, not just his career. One was changing his name from the Ringmaster to Stone Cold Steve Austin. Thank God they did that. 2 was DiBiase leaving, right? Austin was left to speak for himself instead of having somebody else do the talking for him. And 3 was ditching the $1 million dream as a finish for the Stone Cold Stunner. One of the best finishes ever. It's such a simple move, but, you know, the reaction it would get, everybody will always associate that move with Austin, even though he didn't invent the move. He popularized it. You can hit it on anybody right from anywhere. It's a great move. So switching to that as a finish was key. Those three things set the stage for what was to come. And so our countdown takes us back to the King of the Ring. On June 23rd, 1996, this was the first year they did not do the entire tournament in one night, which I always hated when they made that change, when they cut down the tournament to just the semifinals and the finals on pay-per-view. Austin wrestled Wildman Mark Mero in the semifinals. In doing so, he ended up with 16 stitches in his upper lip. He had to go to the hospital during the show. While the show was still taking place, he left to go to the hospital, got stitched up, came back because he still had one more match to wrestle. He wrestled a short match in the main event of the tournament, the finals, with Jake the Snake Roberts. Jake was a born-again Christian. He had made it part of his on-air persona. He even had a new snake he called Revelations, right? It wasn't about Damien anymore or Lucifer. Now it was Revelations. I think it was an albino snake. Wasn't enough to win, unfortunately for him. Austin won the tournament, and he has the Click to thank for that because it's since been confirmed. I mean, it's pretty much been talked about by Triple H and Austin themselves that Triple H was penciled in originally to win King of the Ring that year, get a big push until the curtain call. There's the curtain call incident at Madison Square Garden took place, and Hall and Nash left, and Shawn was the WWF champion, and so poor Triple H, it all fell on him. Plans changed, and by the end of the year, poor Triple H was feuding with Henry Godwin and rolling around in pig slop. So the story goes, Vince went over, he pulled Austin aside in the parking lot one day, and he said, hey, you're winning King of the Ring, and the rest is history. So Austin wins, he walks up onto the stage to be interviewed by Michael Hayes after his big win, and he cuts probably the most memorable promo in WWE history. Now, remember, Austin had to go to the hospital to get those 16 stitches. He wasn't there. He did not hear the promo that Jake the Snake cut before his match with Vader, because Jake's match in the tournament against Vader went on right after Austin's match with Mero. So Austin was either being tended to in the back or he was already gone. Jake's in the back with Michael Hayes. He's cutting a promo. It's got religious overtones to it. He's talking about the Lord above. Austin didn't see any of that. When he got back to the building, Hayes had to fill him in that, hey, Jake cut this promo on you with religious overtones earlier. And it was that heads up that got Austin thinking about what he was going to say, which was not scripted out for him by a bunch of different people. And I'm going to play the audio for you right now. This is the iconic Austin 316 speech. And it's number two in our countdown.
The fourth prestigious King of the Ring, Stone Cold Steve Austin, an incredible victory.
The first thing I want to be done is to get that piece of crap out of my ring. Don't just get him out of the ring, get him out of the WWF. Because I've proved, son, without a shadow of a doubt, you ain't got what it takes anymore. You sit there and you thump your Bible and you say your prayers and it didn't get you anywhere. Talk about your Psalms. Talk about John 3:16. Austin 3:16 says, I just whipped your ass.
Come on, that's not necessary.
All he's got to do is go buy him a cheap bottle of Thunderbird and try to dig back some of that courage he had in his prime. As the King of the Ring, I'm serving notice to every one of the WWF superstars. I don't give a damn what they are. They're all on the list, and that's Stone Cold's list, and I'm fixing to start running through all of them. As far as this championship match is considered, son, I don't give a damn if it's Davey Boy Smith or Shawn Michaels. Steve Austin's time has come. And when I get the shot, you're looking at the next WWF champion. And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Obviously, anything but humble, the fourth prestigious King of the Ring, Stone Cold Steve Austin.
I have that entire promo memorized word for word to this day. It's short, it's to the point, but it's a minute and a half of just badassery. In one speech, he debuted not one but two catchphrases that would make him and make that company millions upon millions of dollars. Austin 316, right, which ended up on a t-shirt that I'm pretty sure is still the biggest selling t-shirt of all time. And that's the bottom line because Stone Cold said so. Now, it's possible that he used it a time or two in the weeks leading up to the show. Maybe he mentioned it on Raw or something. I don't remember that. I don't remember him using that phrase before this. And if he did, it was this promo that made it famous. So, two catchphrases this guy got over in one night. And another little interesting observation from all of this, if you go back and you watch, is that as Austin walked up the stage before the promo with Michael Hayes, he stared at the crown and the robe as he walked up the steps. He never put them on. He is the first King of the Ring winner of the four up to that point on pay-per-view that they had to not wear all of that stuff after he won. Because just imagine him cutting that Austin 316 promo, right? 16 stitches in his lip while wearing a fucking crown on his head. I don't think it would have had quite the same effect, and I think he was smart enough to know that. When I think of Austin 316 and I compare it to CM Punk's pipe bomb, which a lot of people do, and Punk's pipe bomb was number three in the countdown last week, I think one of the biggest differences... Well, I mean, there's two big differences. Number one, unlike Punk, who had already been a three-time world champion before he ever cut that promo, and you could also throw in the ECW title he won, and you can throw in the Ring of Honor title that he won... He was already a world champ before that. Steve Austin had never been a world champion before. He had always had world title potential in the eyes of a lot of people, but there was something that was holding him back. And this was the moment that he truly broke through. But here's the other big difference between the two, and this is where I think some people romanticize maybe about the impact that this promo had just a little bit too much. When Punk dropped the pipe bomb, he ended up as the WWE champion a few weeks later. And he ended up getting the biggest push of his career. It was pretty much an immediate thing, right? Within weeks of cutting that pipe bomb. Because he cut the pipe bomb in kind of preparation for what had already been announced as a championship match with John Cena. He was already getting a title shot. But there was a lot of questions about whether or not he would be sticking around or not. There was that question. But yes, he was already scheduled to get a championship match. So that's important to mention. But I don't know. I mean, without that promo that, you know, he cut that night in Vegas when he sat on that stage Indian style, I don't know that it ends with him re-signing with the company. That promo, it flipped a switch. It changed something. Maybe he does wrestle John Cena and ride off into the sunset that night. That promo may well have changed the course of his career. Now, the Austin 316 speech, some people seem to think that he cut this promo and he was the champion within months and he went on this big run. That's not true. That's not what happened. Owen Hart won King of the Ring. He got a championship match at SummerSlam. Mabel won King of the Ring. He got a championship match at SummerSlam. Steve Austin wins King of the Ring, doesn't even get on the SummerSlam card. He was relegated to the pre-show, wrestling Yokozuna in a two-minute match. A match that he only won because the finish was that the rope broke, the rope was going to break, and Yokozuna was going to fall down and get pinned. I mean, it really wasn't until Bret Hart came back months later that Austin got his first really big match. And even then, when Bret initially came back, I don't believe the plan was to do a rematch with Austin at WrestleMania. There's no way that was the original plan. It was going to be Bret against Shawn. I just talked about this earlier. It was going to be Bret against Shawn. Shawn won the belt back from Sid at the Alamo Dome, at the Royal Rumble. Bret was going to win the final four match in February for a shot at the title. But then Shawn lost his smile. He had his bum knee. So the championship was vacated and Bret won the final four match, but it ended up being for the championship. Now, Austin, if my memory serves, he was supposed to wrestle, I believe, the British Bulldog at WrestleMania. So, you look at what they had Austin doing after this promo, and had things gone the way that they wanted them to, Austin 316 would have just been a cool promo that sold a bunch of shirts. But by no means did it make him some kind of overnight sensation. It got people talking. People still remember that promo to this day. But it's not like the world changed and everything was so different the next night on Raw. I should go back and check, actually. Who the hell knows? Who even knows if he wrestled on Raw the next night? Right? I don't even know. I'd have to go back and check. But Bret Hart had just as much, if not more, to do with Austin getting over to that next level. Now, still, it got Austin noticed. It did put him on the path. He might have fallen off that path had Bret Hart not come back when he did, and Bret kept him, you know, steady on that path, and he went on to become one of the biggest stars of all time. So that's the story of Austin 316. Again, next week I've got some honorable mentions to go through. These are some great promos that did not make the top nine, but I love them all, and they deserve to be mentioned. We've got one left in the countdown. Number one, mark it down, November 6th, here on the Sound Off, is when the big reveal will take place. What's it going to be? Austin 316's already been mentioned. The pipe bomb's been mentioned. What could number one be? You'll find out in 2 weeks. If you want to send questions into the show, again, the place to do so is thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please follow me on Twitter. @solomonster is my handle. I want to give a shout out also to TV Tracks. I mentioned him briefly earlier, but he's got a great channel you all should check out. Lots of Sound Off clips on there, but also clips from other podcasts as well. So show him some love. Go to YouTube. It's TVTRAX is the place to go. You'll find clips galore all over YouTube. And actually, next weekend, I guess, is the Halloween show. Oh, it's my favorite show of the year. I love Halloween. I'm even thinking about going trick-or-treating for the first time since I was about 8. You think that would be creepy? I guess it depends on what mask I wear. I actually have a lucha mask. My friend bought me. He was in Mexico a few years ago. He bought me like a Rey Mysterio lucha mask. Maybe I'll walk around in one of those. We'll see. That'd be kind of funny, actually. Maybe I can... what's that thing? Periscope? We can periscope Solomonster going trick-or-treating. Anyway, we will be back next weekend. It'll be episode 467. We'll have Hell in a Cell predictions. I want to mention also that there will be a Hell in a Cell wrap-up show, a YouTube Hell in a Cell review show, Sound Off Extra, going up next weekend. It will be going up exclusively for 24 hours in the SE Scoops mobile app. So if you do not already have the app downloaded, now would be a good time to download it. It is free. It does not cost you anything. If you have an Android, if you have an iPhone, doesn't matter. Download the SE Scoops mobile app, because the Hell in a Cell post show next Sunday night and all day Monday will be available exclusively through the SE Scoops app. And then after those 24 hours, it'll go live for everybody else. So just be aware of that. That's coming up next Sunday. Looking forward to that. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. Keep spreading the good word of the Sound Off. I very much appreciate all of your support, whether it's just telling other people about the show, making a PayPal donation, using our Audible link, buying a t-shirt. I completely forgot to mention that, but there is a small sale going on right now on Pro Wrestling Tees until Monday at noon. If you're listening to this before then, you can get 15% off anything in our store on Pro Wrestling Tees. So it would be a good time to buy a shirt if you've been thinking about doing that. And so until next weekend, I guess that's about it. Be well, stay safe. Thank you as always. And we'll see you back here for 467. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off. What?
This Impact show has moved so many times. It's got more fucking moves than Bruno Mars, this show does. Don't believe me, just watch. Impact started out on Friday, then moved to Saturday, Thursday, then they moved it to Monday. They got slaughtered, so they moved it back to Thursday, then they moved it to Wednesday, Friday again, then back to Wednesday, Tuesday, and now back to Thursday. It's like the big show of TV shows. It's turned 1,000 times already, and the only time people pay any attention to it is when it makes them laugh.
Solomonster sounds off. Since 2007, the Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.